This episode is sponsored by Verisk Marketing Solutions. Verisk Marketing Solutions enables brands and platform partners to remove the guesswork around segmentation, timing, and messaging to help you continuously maintain a complete picture of your customers' and prospects' identity, attributes, and in-market behaviors as they change over time. Confidently personalize interactions to the right person at the right time. Visit marketing.verisk.com for more information. Hello, everyone, and thanks for hanging out with us for the Behind the Numbers Weekly Listen, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Verisk Marketing Solutions. This is the Friday show that just realized it accidentally banned Bill Fisher from the Weekly Listen for 1 year for absolutely no reason at all. Sorry, Bill.
He knows what he did.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Marcus Johnson. In today's show, advertising is falling for AI.
There's going to be lots of issues around the use of AI in advertising. There are going to be problems with it, but the big, shiny promise of what it can offer, I think, will likely blind companies and see them sweep all these issues under the carpet.
Inside the minds of Gen Z,
they're kind of like every other generation when they're really young. You know, they're really independent, opinionated, do not want to be coddled, and just care about quality.
Spotify pivots.
Spotify has been trying for literally 10 years to incorporate video into its platform, and I think this latest attempt is also going to fail.
Twitter's new CEO starts writing its next chapter. Where are podcast ad revenues heading? And how many people visit Las Vegas, and how much do they spend? Join me for this episode. We have three people. Let's meet them. We start with one of our senior analysts covering digital advertising and media based out of Pennsylvania. It's Max Willens.
Yo.
Hello there, sir. We're also joined by one of our directors of forecasting based out of New York. We call him Oscar Orozco.
Hello, hello.
And finally, we have our principal analyst covering everything media and marketing in the UK. He's, of course, the host of our Around the World Behind the Numbers show. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Bill Fisher.
Thanks for having me back, eventually.
No idea why you weren't allowed here back for 1 year, but I feel like Victoria had something to do with it. Welcome back to the show. What do we have in store for you? Well, story of the week, advertising falling for AI. That's where we begin. We then move to the game of the week, where you guys will go against each other to give us the best takeaways you can from each of the four stories we have for you to win the championship belt. And finally, we end with dinner party data. We'll talk some random trivia. We start, of course, with the story of the week. Advertising is falling for AI. Shireen Ghaffari of Vox writes that the ad industry is going all in on AI. She points out that even before they became hot buzzwords in the industry, automation and AI were powering advertising behind the scenes for years, determining ad prices, who saw the ad, and what copy was most effective. How else would Google rank your search results? But after ChatGPT burst onto the scene, tech companies have been getting flashier with AI, falling deeper in love with AI, it would seem. A couple of examples. She points out that at this year's International Festival of Creativity in Cannes, Google showed off a tool that lets clients upload a single image of a company logo and instantly get back lots of high-quality 3D images in the same branded style. Meta said it's working on an AI-powered assistant that can help advertisers create ads. Coca-Cola used AI image generation tool Stable Diffusion to help create an award-nominated ad called Coca-Cola Masterpiece that was whipped up 5 times faster than it would have been thanks to AI. And Spotify is seeing if it can train AI on specific people's voices to one day generate original audio ads from scratch. But gents, what interests you most about advertising's recent love affair with AI/generative AI?
I think it's interesting that it's being framed as all of advertising is falling in love with AI. I think if you work at an ad agency, you have a very different idea about this. Agencies are paid to embrace change and to be excited about change. And so they, when a reporter sticks a microphone in their face, are going to say that they're excited about this.
Right.
But in doing prep for this episode, one of the articles that I looked at was something written by Patrick Coffey in the Journal. There was research commissioned for the story with a market research firm, Newton X, and they found that nearly half of respondents said that this is going to lead to smaller budgets for agencies. It's going to lead to smaller, lower headcounts at agencies. And the top priority among marketers in that journal story when it came to what they would use AI for, they were looking to drive efficiency. And efficiency, as we all know, is a code for saving money. And so I think that there's definitely, if you're a brand that, you know, is just starting out and maybe only spends money on Google and Facebook, this is super exciting. If you are a brand that is a bit bigger, but has been slowly kind of pulling money and resources out of the agency world and trying to be more self-reliant, this is very exciting. If you are a mid-sized creative agency, you are pooping in your pants that this is happening. Mm-hmm. And there is really not a lot about the rise of this technology, I think, to get excited about.
Efficiency is that word where you think we're going to be all heading in the direction of Germany and only working 8-hour days. But no, really, it just means, can we squeeze more out of less and save money whilst we're doing it?
Yeah, and this has been happening for years anyway, right?
So, right, 100%.
You know, the ad industry has had this proclivity to engage in a race to the bottom. So, you know, they've seen digital as this highly efficient, highly measurable, cheaper, as Max said, way to reach customers. Mm-hmm. Automate everything, measure this, measure that. But over the years, we've seen several high-profile cases where digital screwed things up, you know, placing ads next to questionable content or large-scale ad fraud, ad dollars being siphoned off by shonky tech. But the concern is none of this has stopped the industry from continuing down certain paths to digitization. Now, there's going to be lots of issues around the use of AI in advertising. There are going to be problems with it, but the big, shiny promise of what it can offer, I think will likely blind companies and see them sweep all these issues under the carpet.
Mm-hmm. I think that all of this, you know, kind of, I guess, momentum is being even stronger. Really, we're seeing it more because of the economic turmoil we're currently in, right?
Right.
The high inflation, all of that. Exactly. The timing of it. It's being compounded in that way. Mm-hmm. So that's why we keep hearing first about, you know, well, you know, the cost savings and added productivity. If it wasn't for that, I think that it would be thought of as more of a, as a, you know, sort of a creative asset, you know, sort of, I'm thinking of it from the worker's standpoint, less so from the companies themselves, but, you know, how can I use this? How can it be my, almost like a personal secretary that can streamline some of the things, mundane tasks that I'm doing or helping me brainstorm a bit? And I think, you know, given the circumstances, we're hearing a little bit less of that, but that's really where I see this going, at least in the next 6 to 12 months, and and what the focus should be on, rather than from the company's perspective, yeah, cutting costs, we'll see. Because a lot of this still needs to be, you know, looked at by actual live people. And, you know, it's a process that still needs to be in the hands of the workers. So I'm a bit skeptical of really the cost savings in the long term.
It's hard because it's a tough thing to kind of wrap your arms around, because it kind of crosses over into multiple different areas. And so when you're talking about AI, I mean, I wonder whether it's, you know, kind of the genie's out of the bottle and it's already too late to kind of reframe this in a positive light, for particularly for advertising, because when people think about this, they're going to think, or they could often think about all of those negative things just talked about, this race to the bottom. But there are some really helpful ways that it can advance advertising. For example, using AI chatbots to research something, planning a trip somewhere. And because of its back and forth, the chatbot remembers what you said, has more context about what you're looking for. It can ask relevant follow-up questions. It can personalize the type of search that you're doing, as opposed to going single search queries one after the other. And Jennifer Cregan, from one of the pieces we were reading, General Manager of Global Marketing and Ops from Microsoft Advertising, recently saying that people search queries 3 times longer in Bing AI because of the back and forth, which leads to better conversions, because Google and Bing, they can pop ads inside those conversations people are having with their AI chatbot assistants, search generative experience, and Bing AI. And that's one area where I think it's really exciting to see what AI can do, so that every time you go to search for something, it remembers, you know, what you've asked. It can build on that query. But AI is going to get muddied with all of the good and all of the bad. And I think it's going to be really hard to pass out where it can shine and where it's going to fall down.
Absolutely. I think it's being commoditized. It's put into everyone's hands. It's in everyone's household. And I think thinking from the consumer standpoint, exactly the examples you just provided, it can provide a bit of an equal playing field for certain things and tasks. And so I think that's really the exciting part of this. Now, how can we incorporate it into our day-to-day work, you know, life? You know, I think we'll have to look out for regulation issues and, you know, one of the articles mentioned even copyright infringement and the things that can come from creating ads that way and thinking about ads specifically here. So a lot of things to keep an eye out for.
Yeah, you should check out. So we've covered AI a bunch, but in particular, we covered it in June 5th, June 6th. We had a two-part series. We looked at the problems with AI, and there was Jacob Bourne and Garjo Sevilla, two of our connectivity and tech analysts. We covered whether AI can be considered an inventor. We covered copyright. We covered some regulation stuff, how dangerous AI could be in the future. We also talked about yesterday as well, AI regulation and how it could change our lives. So go check out that episode as well. That's what we've got time for the story of the week. Time, of course, for the game of the week. Today's game, what's the point? Where I read out four stories and have contestants Bill, Oscar, and Max tell us what they think is the main takeaway of the story. Okay answers get 1 point, good answers get two, and answers that leave you with the same feeling as when you're cutting wrapping paper and the scissors start to glide.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, answers that leave you with that feeling, they get you 3 points. You get 20 seconds to answer before you hear this. So I've modified the game for Bill because we normally say technical foul, but run long and it's a yellow card. Ooh. Oh, soccer slash football reference. Minus 2 points. If you get two yellows, that gets you a red and you'll be tossed from the game. Whoever has the most points wins, gets the last word. Let's play. We start with Max for round one, inside the minds of Gen Z. Marketing solutions company Snip just put out some research about Gen Z consumer behavior and preferences. One of the many findings was on how they get their news. Most young Gen Z men, 60%, got their news from YouTube. For women, 50% got it from TikTok. Both were way ahead of traditional news channels. These are also the top places, YouTube for men and TikTok for women. These different genders discovered new brands and products. Second place was Instagram for both, and then it was ads. Lots of other findings in this research from Snip. But Max, getting inside the minds of Gen Z, what's the point?
I think there's two things that really leap out at me from this research. And one is something that you alluded to, which is just how incredibly reliant Gen Z is on TikTok for really everything, you know, for shopping recommendations, for news. It's, we really have kind of arrived back at a portal stage of internet consumption, except instead of AOL, it's TikTok for these kids. I also think it's quite alarming that this year they intend to spend a lot less time in kind of public spaces. So they'll spend less time this year going to concerts, less time going to parties, less time going on trips, and more time online. So touch the grass, kids. I recommend it.
Don't listen to him. Stay inside. Bill.
Okay, I'm going to go anecdotal on you because I live with two Gen Zers. I have two boys who fit in this category. And when we allowed my youngest to use TikTok, he's been on our case for years, but when we finally let him, I would sit down with him. So I ensured that he was watching the right stuff and, you know, not being shown questionable content. And it's fascinating just to watch this behavior. They're like alien beings to me. And, you know, this behavior that is being engendered by TikTok, he sees the video, it comes on his screen, and within a second, he either swipes it or decides to engage with it. It's that quick. It's 1 second. And he knows whether he's going to engage with it or not. So my takeaway here is the TikTok generation, you got to catch them within a second.
Yeah. Good luck. Oscar.
You know, there are a lot of interesting points in the survey itself. I wanted to focus a little bit more on the shopping part. And there was a point that where they asked them, you know, what's the most important brand characteristics? I totally expected environmental sustainability and products and packaging and things like that to be number one. Was not the case. It was all about high quality goods, reasonable prices, pretty standard stuff. My real takeaway, aside from the digitally native generation that is Gen Z, is that they're kind of like every other generation when they're really young. You know, they're really independent, opinionated, do not want to be coddled, and just care about quality. So that's what I took from it.
staying on shopping for a second, yeah, I thought one of the points that was interesting was there was no product category that these young Gen Z people were buying primarily online. Most of them were going into a store or both in store and online, but not just online. Electronics came very close to that. And then, yeah, the top two forms of notification they prefer from their favorite retailers, brands about deals was email first and then text. So yeah, email lives on, unfortunately. All right, let's move to round two. We start with Bill. Spotify pivots. Two updates here. One, Spotify is planning to launch a more expensive premium tier that will include hi-fi audio, better quality audio, according to Bloomberg, writes Insider Intelligence Briefing's analyst Daniel Konstantinovich. He explains that the tier is being referred to as Supremium. Clever. Internally, and will debut as Spotify's priciest subscription tier in non-US markets. In other Spotify news, this is the second thing, our connectivity and tech briefings analyst Garjo Sevilla, who I mentioned earlier, says that Spotify is shifting business models from developing and acquiring exclusive content like HBO to creating a mass market for user-generated content and video, pitting it against YouTube and TikTok. But Bill, Spotify pivoting, what's the point?
A lot to fit into 20 seconds there. Two stories. I'm going to concentrate on the second
one. That's all we have time for, Oscar.
I'm going to concentrate on the second one because I ask, what is the point? I don't get it. I don't understand why they want to get into video. It's such a competitive space already. User-generated content perhaps makes a bit more sense, cheaper to create. It could attract the Gen Zers that we were talking about before, but are people going to go to Spotify for user-generated content or do they want quality content? I suspect the first part of the story makes much more sense for Spotify.
Mm-hmm. Good questions. Oscar?
I'm going to use a few seconds to answer Bill's question and say no, they're not. I'm equally as skeptical about this idea. I was actually taken aback a bit by Daniel Ek. He said that maybe they were a bit overly ambitious with their investments over the last few years. I'm surprised to hear that because they've grown so fast. Their profitability has increased, but you know they need to hit their target margins. And this is, I think, why they're trying these things out. Better monetization of the platform. Can video lead to that? Maybe, but I don't see really any of these two ideas moving the needle much.
Mm-hmm. Max?
Yeah, I agree with everything that Bill and Oscar both said. I mean, Spotify has been trying for literally 10 years to incorporate video into its platform. And I think this latest attempt is also going to fail. Mm. I think that in light of that idea of them kind of returning to ideas over and over again, I think they're going to wind up pivoting back to this, you know, strategy that they're ostensibly walking away from of doing premium stuff. I think they just overspent on the exclusive stuff, like the Harry and Meghan deal that cost them $100 million. That's too much money for podcasts, but, you know, maybe the next round of high profile spends will cost them 10 and that will, you know, drive the long-term benefit. I think ultimately Bill is right. This is a premium product and you need to market it and approach its development as such.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Spotify is pretty good shape. They've been growing users pretty healthily, especially the last couple of quarters, pretty strong user growth. So no problems there. Revenue as well, pretty decent revenue from paid subscribers. 90% of Spotify's money is paid subscribers. That grew over 20% in 2022, a touch better than 2021. Its ad revenue, about 10% of the business, so pretty small. That's where the problem was. That grew at 20% as well last year, but it was three times slower than the previous year. So ad revenue slowed down, but Spotify, outside of that, is still chugging along quite nicely. All right, the halfway mark, Max, Bill, and Oscar all tied with 5 points. We'll play gents. We move into round three. We start with Oscar, who looks to break the tie. We're talking about Twitter's new CEO, Linda Yaccarino, starting to write its next chapter. A non-compete clause with her former employer, NBC Universal, has prevented Ms. Yaccarino from hitting the ground running and trying to win back advertisers, at least for now. Instead, she has been busy repairing the relationship with Google over unpaid invoices related to cloud, talked with regulators, and focused on employee morale, according to the New York Times. The recent article was noting that Mr. Musk and Ms. Yaccarino plan to focus more on video, work with influencers and news publishers, and integrate payment capabilities. But Oscar, Twitter's new CEO, Linda Yaccarino, starting to write its next chapter. What's the point?
Well, it seems like Ms. Iacarino's only focus so far has been on paying unpaid invoices and holding happy hours, I think is what the article said. My main question is, like, why didn't Elon bring someone with him as part of the transition much earlier? You know, we knew Twitter's revenues were tied over 90% to advertising, and it's been about 9 months now that we've been tracking ad revenues down month over month. I mean, anecdotally, I've noticed the degradation of all ad quality and content on Twitter. So my question is, like, why not sooner? And what happened there? What was Elon thinking? You know, and aside from that, you know, I would just say there was clearly a plan to lay off half the workforce. So he thought he could get away with this for a while. But I think it's a little too late.
I think Oscar's going to start a Twitter account called What Was Elon Thinking?
Might already have one.
Max.
I just think it's, to Oscar's point, Linda's got to do something because thanks to a non-compete clause that she had with NBCU, she can't do ad sales. So she's, you know, what she's doing makes more sense than her, you know, cleaning the floors. But I just think it's pretty hilarious that they decided to poach somebody for a, you know, to sell a product that at the moment doesn't really have viable video. No one is talking about Tucker Carlson's new show anymore. And someone who also can't sit down and close big deals with the holding companies. So I'm glad to hear she's keeping busy.
Bill?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe I'll pick up the first yellow card. I don't know what to say about this. It's just, Twitter's just a hot mess, right? And to Oscar's point, why didn't Musk do this earlier? Because it's Elon Musk. He's a law unto himself, you know? I mean, he's coming round to the idea that maybe, you know, advertising is quite important to this thing I've just blown a whole bunch of money on. But I don't know, mate. Just give me a yellow card and be done with it.
Yellow it is. No yellow necessary. But it does seem like if you look at the past year, things have gone pretty bad. But all things considered, they're still planning to make a decent amount of money. Mr. Musk says he expects revenue this year to be around $3 billion. We'll see. But that doesn't seem too bad considering they cut staff by 75%, Twitter's value is down two-thirds, and they lost close to half of their top advertisers. A lot haven't even come back. For context, Twitter made around $5 billion in 2021. That was the last full year of reported numbers we have before Mr. Musk took Twitter private last year. But given, if someone explained to you, okay, there's a company, if it was like a blind reveal, they do these on First Things First sports show where it's like, okay, the company is just silhouetted and you can't see who it is, it's grayed out. And they say, okay, here's the timeline of a company that was bought, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then you would think that the company had gone under at this point, considering what's happened to it. But if they can still make a couple of billion dollars this year and grow that, you know, over the coming years, we'll see. Obviously, oh, I don't know why I just pressed the bell. Pressed the bell on myself. Run long, Marcus. Enough.
Good point.
But yeah, we'll see. Round four is where we end. Of course, it's double points round four. All to play for. We've got Oscar just out in front with 7, Max and Bill on 6 apiece. We go into round four. We start with Max. 2022 podcast ad revenue is up 26% year on year, according to the IAB's US podcast advertising report. They expect podcast ad revenues to double by 2025, to reach $4 billion, growing twice as fast as digital advertising overall. The top revenue generating content genres, sports 15%, society and culture with 14%, and comedy with 14% as well, all overtaking news and political opinion. But Max, 2022 podcasting ad revenue up. What's the point?
I think that the point is that this should put to rest the persistent chatter around the idea that podcasting is in the middle of a correction of some kind. I'm old enough to remember when there was research that was put out that suggested that, you know, with a little bit of luck, or maybe a lot of luck, podcasting could get to $2 billion by 2025. And this IAB research suggests that it's going to be more than twice that. This is a very healthily growing market. And this is all happening with the medium having a really persnickety and persistent measurement problem. So imagine how much more robust it could get if they ever crack that code.
Bill?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. So I looked at this from a UK perspective. Podcaster listener numbers are going up, but not particularly significantly. So audiences aren't really growing by much. I actually found some data from Quantilope. It found that audio streaming ads, including podcasts as a subcategory, the most disliked ads among UK adults. What's going on here? Well, I guess what we're seeing in the podcast.
Bloody English.
I guess what we're seeing in the podcast space is deeper segmentation, lots of smaller scale podcasts offering tightly targeted audiences. I mean, this was part of the appeal of TikTok in recent times, right? You can get to the audience you want, even if it's a small audience. Mm-hmm. There might be a ceiling here, I don't know. But I just think the point is all ad dollars should be funneled into behind the numbers.
Yes, Bill wins the game of the week. Congratulations. That was, in fact, the answer we were looking for. 1,000 points to Bill. Oscar, there's really no point, mate. All right, that's all we've got time for the game of the week. Now, Oscar, what you got, mate? Tell us.
Yeah, no, great points. I mean, I think looking at it from the US perspective, we are saying by 2027, we'll have about 150 million regular podcast listeners. It's a big number, although, yes, we're maybe past the point of the fastest growth. But, you know, I wanted to use the time also to plug in an upcoming report from Ethan Kramer Flood, who's frequently on the program. He'll be talking about sort of how audio and podcasts, as well as a media type, just it's an underutilized, undervalued media type right now by advertisers. Yes, there might be measurement issues, but so many people are listening to podcasts, listening to audio, and it's not being used by advertisers as much as maybe it should be.
Very nice. So two things from me. One follows on from what Oscar was saying about the size of the audience in the US, at least. It does trail the US in the UK by a fair amount. Bill, I imagine that's because of the strength of radio and the national radio.
Yeah, perhaps.
We have Radio 1, which is like huge. It's like a religion almost. It's huge reach in the UK because the UK is not too big. And so it's easy for everyone to kind of plug into a couple of radio stations versus the US, which obviously is about 50 countries in itself. But anyway, the US audience, we estimate that there are over 100 million weekly podcast listeners and climbing, 130 million listen each month. Oscar was saying 150, that's monthly, right, mate, in a couple of years. Yeah. 60% of millennials listen, 50% of Gen Z people, and 40% of Gen X folks are podcast. Oh, enough with the bell, Johnson, put it away. are podcast listeners. And then the second thing here is news and political opinion falling from the top spot, being overtaken by sports, society and culture and comedy. And I wondered whether that was one, a sign of the times, people are just a bit exhausted by it all, or two, the fact that 2023 isn't an election year. So maybe it's just not on people's minds as much as normal.
That was my read on it.
It was, you know, okay.
2020 and 2021, I think everyone was still, even though they're a little COVIDed out, there was still kind of a lot of uncertainty floating around. And then 2022, people took the opportunity to say, let's relax.
Yeah. Okay. All right, folks, that's what we've got time for the game of the week. Check the scores. A drum roll happens in the background. Thank you for Victoria for putting that in. Oscar is this week's winner of the game of the week with 11. Bill and Max tied in joint second on 10. Well played, folks. Very well played. Congratulations to Oscar. He wins the championship belt. And of course, the last word.
Amazing. Super exciting. Always love winning. Last word. I mean, I guess.
It's rubbish.
Means a lot to me, Mark. Means a lot. I guess I'll use the time to talk about a recent movie I watched. I'd recommend it. I think it's on Prime.
Bambi? It's a classic. Bambi. Oscar just got around to it.
You know, I don't think I ever saw Bambi. Maybe when I was
five.
Oh,
my goodness.
Maybe I should watch
it.
Over.
No, next. What's next? Dinner party data. Oscar.
Listen, watch it. A Perfect Getaway. It's Chris Hemsworth's first U.S. role, the heartthrob Chris Hemsworth. So check it out. Right. Really fun.
Ignore him. Go watch Bambi. Have you really not watched Bambi?
Honestly.
You monster.
I must have been really young. I don't remember it.
Oscar, I'm sorry to have to do this to you. Bill knows how this feels. You're banned 1 year. 1 year. He's gone. He's
Red
gone.
Red
He's
clock.
Out of there. that's all we've got time for the game of the week. Time, of course, now for dinner party data. This is the part of the show where we tell you about the most interesting thing that we've learned this week. Oscar won. He hasn't watched Bambi. Unfortunately, we still have to start with him. Go on, Oscar.
This will be a good one. So I was speaking about kind of like my diet the last, you know, a few weeks ago with some friends, and I came to my understanding, I never had thought of this, but they said that I was maybe an intermittent faster. Intermittent faster. I don't know if anyone knows what that means, but essentially it's I have all of my meals like in an 8-hour period throughout the day, and then I guess the other, 16 hours are spent not eating, just I guess you can, you know, drink water and things like this. Didn't realize I was doing it, but I guess I do it. So I wanted to look into it a little bit. So I found a study that showed that if you're trying to lose weight and you're sick of, you know, doing the kind of the typical watching what you eat, counting calories, things like this, researchers have found that you can watch the clock instead. So you can use this method, to sort of just, you know, eat everything in a very condensed amount of time. And then not eat for many other hours, and it kind of does the same job. So the study found that pretty much they had two separate groups of people. Some ate between the hours of noon and 8, that they were able to achieve the same weight loss as people who were paying very close attention to their food choices. So I found that to be very, very interesting. And, you know, the reasons this might be happening is the idea to compress your eating into 6 or 8 hours is to reduce the amount of insulin your body produces. That's important because insulin is what tells the body to store fat. So they're showing that this is just kind of another method, maybe not using Weight Watchers or something like this, that can actually help you achieve your goals. So I thought it was really interesting.
Remarkably, I have just started doing this. This week. Yeah, believe it. I'm not trying to lose weight, but I also read that it has other benefits. And so I've just recently, this is going to make me sound old, I've just recently been diagnosed as having arthritis. I've got arthritis in my hand. And apparently fasting, one of the other effects of fasting is it can, I can't quite remember exactly what it is, but it can speed up regeneration of certain cells as well. Oh, wow. So that's why I'm doing it.
Amazing. Wow. And you're allowed to, you can have coffee and tea, that's okay. So, but it's just about meals, but very, very cool. I hadn't read about that.
So, Oscar, this has happened over time. You just accidentally, like, it's not like it was a conscious decision for you.
Yeah. It was just over time. It was kind of not feeling the need to, you know, eat early in the breakfast, essentially. And then, you're just kind of having like lunch later in the day. And then obviously you'll have like a dinner, snack or something. But yeah.
I wonder what the pandemic could have done to people's
I think it did.
Changing what they eat.
Exactly. And just maybe like not moving as much early in the morning, right? Working from home. So I agree. I think that's probably led to it.
Fascinating. Bill, go ahead, mate.
Well, food might be on my mind a bit more than in recent times. So this is food related. There was an interesting story that came out of Italy
Bill's
last
favorite
week.
Foods. It's a big list.
So they're doing an archaeological excavation in Pompeii at the moment. So this is the town that got wiped out when Vesuvius erupted nearly 2,000 years ago. Anyway, they're always doing excavations there. You know, the ash, perfectly preserved bodies and buildings. Anyway, they've discovered a house that had a really, really well-preserved painting on the wall. And on the painting, they think they have found evidence of one of the first pizzas nearly 2,000 years old. And what do you think the topping was?
Pepperoni, come on.
Ham and pineapple. No, it wasn't. No, it was
asparagus.
It was it's very different to modern pizza. There was no tomato or how American am I? No tomato or mozzarella in sight. It was essentially a very round but plain focaccia style bread seasoned with spices, and that was it.
It needs sounds tomato awful. Sauce, right? That's interesting. That's
wow. Really
cool.
Favorite pizza topping though, Bill?
Ham and pineapple. No. I like
it. We'll see you in a year, Bill. We'll see you in a year.
I'm pepperoni, like you.
Okay, he's back. We'll see you next week.
That's me too. Yeah.
Max, pepperoni?
Yeah, make it 3 for 3.
Yes. There we go.
Hard
share
resist.
A pie. We share the pie. Max, you're up, mate.
So I left New York about 3 years ago, and I periodically get, you know, homesick for portions of it, but there's not really like a consistent set of things. I just periodically am hit with like a oh man, I wish I could go to this or go see that. And that fed into my dinner party data, which is about the Dream House. Do you guys know what that is?
Nope.
Dream House. Nope. So on Church Street, about a half a block south of Canal, there sits a, you know, an old loft building with like the kind of that used to surround Soho. And they're sort of growing fewer and fewer as that area gets modernized. But on the third floor, up some, you know, creaky, creaky steps, is a big apartment that is filled with about 32 synthesizers that are playing different sine wave tones. And because of the way that the house is set up and just the nature of sound itself, the way that your body experiences that sound changes as you move. So if you tilt your head in a certain direction, the sound changes a little bit. If you walk, you know, a half a foot in a different direction, the sound changes again. And the room is also just filled with pillows and weird lights. And you can just spend all day there if you want. You can walk in there for 5 minutes. You can spend all day there. And the Dream House is something that was created by Lamont Young and his wife, Marion Zazila. The idea was, this is from, I got this from Wikipedia, so I hope it's right. But the original idea was, quote, to allow music which after a year, 10 years, 100 years of constant sound would not only be a real living organism with a life and tradition of its own, but one with a capacity to propel itself by its own momentum. I don't know if that's quite what they achieved, but this has been there for 20 years, and it's one of the most kind of like transporting and special things I've ever done. And I always, whenever I think of it, I get an intense longing to go. So
you've been,
next time you're in New York, go to the Dream House.
Nice. Is something you've been to more than once?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And I highly recommend it. Part of the reason that I thought it would be a good dinner party data plug is that this is the 20-year anniversary of this incarnation of it. There have been a couple different iterations of it going back to the late 60s, but okay. the most current version has been there for 20 years.
Very nice. Very nice indeed.
Never heard of this, but I'm Googling it right now.
All right, folks. I got one for you quick. Some stats about Las Vegas. Las Vegas? Las Vegas. I don't know anymore, Bill. I've lived in America too long. I'm coming home.
I think it's Las Vegas.
Las Vegas? Las Vegas? Las Vegas. How do you say it, Bill?
Las.
Las okay, Vegas. Las it is. Las it is! thank God you're on the show, Bill. okay, so yeah, number one, that's how you pronounce it. Number two, 39 million people visited Las Vegas in, I've spent that whole time figuring out how to say it and say it differently, visited Vegas in 2022. It's up 21% according to the Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority. Almost all of those visitors, over 90%, were from the US, compared to pre-pandemic levels in the low to mid 80s. So it was typically always American folks, but now it's almost exclusively Americans visiting Vegas. Just under 3 million people call the Vegas metro area home. So 13 times as many people visit as live there. Then, yeah, 39 million visitors, as close to pre-pandemic levels already. 42 million visitors in 2019, so just a couple million off. Vegas visitors have hovered around 40 million since 2005. So that's how many people are visiting. Convention numbers in particular are also up. Lots of people go to Vegas for conventions. 5 million people traveled to Las Vegas for conventions in 2022, but they're still about 2 million short from pre-pandemic levels. And then finally, visitor spend last year reached a record $45 billion, 22% increase from 2019. Individual spending in Las Vegas reached an all-time high as well, with about $1,100, $1,156 to be exact. Most of that spend, 21% of people's budgets, goes to gambling, 17% to shopping, 15% to the hotel rooms. They buy, so those three expenses account for about half of the spending right there. And then finally, yeah, while only 6% of visitors to Vegas in 2022 were in town specifically to gamble, 75% of all visitors did some kind of gambling during their trip.
You know, I must say I've never been. I have a very close...
To Vegas?
Never.
Bambi? The hell have you been doing with your life?
Nothing,
what
clearly.
What a terrible existence you've lived so far.
Totally my thumbs. But I was going to say, I have a very close friend. His wife is from San Francisco. Whenever they travel there, he agrees to go only if they stop in Las Vegas for a few days as well as part of the trip. So that happens every time they travel west from New York. So I guess people love it. I don't know.
Wait, he said anytime we travel west from New York, even if we're going to go to Florida.
No, it would be out to California.
Okay.
But yes, it's like we have to, as if it was, you know, just like 20 minutes away, right? Yeah.
Okay.
So some people are obsessed.
Bill, you've been?
I have. I didn't gamble when I went.
Really?
Good man.
One of the few. One of the 25% who resisted. Max, how about you?
I actually just got back from my first visit.
Hello.
I did not gamble. I didn't think... Well, it's funny, just that I didn't like the vibe at the poker tables. I played poker a little bit with buddies from college, and, you know, the gambling is kind of a secondary thing. Just didn't seem very appealing to me, so I decided not to gamble.
Not for you.
But it is a wild place to visit.
Yes. Yes, it is indeed. That's all we've got time for today's episode. Thank you so much to my guests. Thank you so much to Max.
Always a pleasure, Marcus.
Don't know why I hit the bill. Thank you to Oscar.
Thanks for having me, Marcus.
I've got to keep it going, though, because I've already started. Thank you to Bill.
See you next year.
Yes, indeed. It's an annual thing. Thank you, of course, to Victoria, who edits the show, James, who copy edits it, and Stuart, who runs the team. Thanks to everyone listening. You can head to behindthenumbers_podcast on Instagram if you want to say hi. We'll see you guys hopefully on Monday for the Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Verisk Marketing Solutions. Happy weekends.